Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This is the Four Corners Podcast.
I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I've said that. To be in Chapel Hill, to be at the University of North Carolina.
We win! 54-53! North Carolina did it! North Carolina wins the championship!
With 20 seconds left to play, goes back to Michael Jordan. Jumper from out on the left. Good! Oh, way to Worthy! Worthy 5! The Tar Heels are going to win the national championship!
Weber, front court, Carolina with foul. He takes the timeout.
Technical
They're out
foul.
Of timeout. Technical foul. Technical foul on Michigan. They're out of timeout.
Front court. Williams on the drive. Gets it back out to him. Long outside shot. Short rebounded. May. It's over. Carolina has won the national championship. 89-72. And how about them Tar Heels? They are the national champions.
I've been the luckiest coach in the world.
Pump fake for three. Too strong on the shot. That's it. The Tar Heels are the national dadgum champions.
Carolina has been tested and tried and been proven successful through all the years. And the way that we will play will be the Carolina way.
My love for North Carolina, I mean, I love this school, I love these fans, and I love everything about it, and I would die for this school, I really would.
Here are your hosts, Josh Marlowe and Anthony Pagnotta.
Hello and welcome into another live edition of the Four Corners Podcast. We are powered by Carolina Electrical Services. Josh and Anthony hanging out with you on a Sunday morning, a little over 16 hours or so since Carolina beat Michigan State in the second round of the NCAA tournament, and they have moved on to the Sweet 16. They'll be back in action on Thursday night in Los Angeles against either Alabama or Grand Canyon. We're here to talk about last night's win over the Spartans, and we'll go through the game as we do every game during the regular season, ACC tournament, and in the NCAA tournament. We've got a good bit of audio we want to play coming out of the game because some really interesting comments made by Armando Bacot, made by Harrison Ingram. And, of course, we got to bring you that speech that Hubert Davis delivered when he did his media when he did his TV hit midway through the first half because, let's just say, the head coach of Carolina basketball not happy with his team and the way that they started. And with that, man, we'll go ahead and jump right into this thing. Carolina wins 85-69, as I mentioned, to advance to the Sweet 16. They did so because their four best offensive players all put the ball in the basket, all scored over double figures. Davis, R.J. Davis with 20, Armando with 18, Harrison Ingram with 17, Cormac Ryan with 14. And Carolina is now 15-1 this year when they have four players scoring double figures. The biggest thing about this game, and we'll start right here, is not the best start to the game. Carolina came out, got hit in the mouth, was down 17-7, trailed by as many as 12 in the opening sequence, and really was looking like the team that the national media told us was going to get beat and was looking like the one seed that everyone told us wasn't going to make it through the first weekend of the tournament. That didn't change after Michigan State beat Mississippi State. If you watched College Game Day yesterday morning, both Jay Williams and Seth Greenberg picked Michigan State to beat Carolina. And we knew Michigan State was playing at a high level after the way they played on Thursday. And they picked up where they left off, but a lot of it was, yes, some good shot making. A lot of it was self-induced, where Carolina not competing on the defensive end of the court, their shot selection after Armando Bacot picked up a charge, which to me, I didn't think was a charge. My dad watching at home said it was the right call. Carolina's offense quit going inside after he scored the first bucket of the game, and That's where you get that outburst from Hubert Davis, which you'll hear in just a moment. But like they've done all season long, the defense has fueled this offense. And from that moment, Carolina would be down. It was like 28-17 before they would go on the run that would eventually change the game. But it was kind of similar to what you saw against Florida State, where back in December, where Carolina turned a double-digit deficit into a lead that they would never relinquish. Carolina would go on a 17-0 run, and it would extend to a 23-3 run to turn that 11-point deficit into a 9-point lead at the break. And, you know, from there, Carolina was able to control and manage the game. Michigan State would make it as close to a 2-point game in the second half, but that's as close as it would get, because it felt like in the second half, Armando, RJ, and Ingram were not going to allow this team to lose. They were not going to allow this team to go home early, and thankfully that's what happened, and thankfully we still got our dancing shoes on, and we're into the second weekend of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what this team was really made of. You saw the leadership that this team has from both their head coach and the players, because – I mean, it was easy to say, if you were them, when you took that first punch from Michigan State, that maybe this just isn't our game. Maybe this just isn't going to be our night. And I think, you know, there were some people probably in the arena that had the same thought, maybe that Michigan State was just going to hit everything, because, yeah, there was a point where it looked like Michigan State had everything going their way. I mean, Carolina – inside, I mean, you're right. It just the effort wasn't there early to try to stop and deny that ball from going into the post. And then when it would get there, it was an easy basket just about every single time. And, you know, right before it really started, right before the official timeout for the under eight, Harrison Ingram hits a three, and that began the run. And so, I think, you know, he hits that shot. I think then Hubert's message on the bench really gets these guys fired up. And you saw immediately a change on the defensive end of the floor. And I believe it was – I think it was Cormack when in the locker room. He said that was really what changed, because somebody asked him, well, you know, you guys – turned it up on the defensive end of the floor, but offensively you started getting better looks. Why was that? And he said, it's because of our defense. It's because we, you know, we're creating turnovers. We were creating missed shots and getting out, in the open space. And that really allowed Carolina to settle in offensively as well. And, you know, once Carolina started heating up, and you saw RJ Davis hit a couple of big shots for Carolina, and Harrison Ingram, of course, that was really where the game started to turn. And, you know, even though Michigan State found a way to cut it to two, you never really felt that concerned after that run, because it felt like this team was really able to exhale and say, okay, we're still the better team here. And they showed that, to pull away and pick up a 16-point victory over the Michigan State Spartans.
Yeah, the deficit, the 12-point deficit, the largest that Carolina's overcome in a tournament game since they trailed by 16 against USC back in 2007. Again, in large part, closed the half on a 23-3 run. The 85 points that Carolina scored are the second most that Michigan State allowed all season long. Northwestern, a team you'll see play today in the second round against UConn, scored 88 on them back in January. And, you know, for the weekend, Carolina averaged 87.5 points per game. So the offense really clicking and firing on all cylinders to open up the tournament. Carolina now 6-0 all time against Michigan State in the Big Dance. And we know how important it was to play in Charlotte, is to play in Charlotte. The Heels are now 14-1. In Charlotte in the tournament, and 36-2 in the state of North Carolina in the tournament. And really got to commend Heels fans, because great, great environment yesterday. Michigan State was well represented, as I think you expected them to be. Once they advanced to Sunday, you knew that their fans would show up, and they most certainly did. And the first 10 minutes or so, it was their party, and they made their presence known. But once Carolina got into the game and they settled into the game, you know, you would have thought this game was in Chapel Hill, the way that there was constant energy, there was a buzz in the crowd. You go and listen to the way that crowd reacted when RJ hit that three in the corner right in front of us where we sit there on media row to make it a 32-28 lead during that massive run. You could argue that's as loud as Spectrum Center has been since probably the 2019 ACC tournament when Carolina and Duke faced off in that building. And so really just want to commend the Carolina faithful for showing up, showing out. Was there, was in the building, could not be a part of the Carolina faithful that was showing up and showing out. Although
we couldn't quite be like a couple of folks that were on media row at one point that were joining in the cheering at one point. Well, that's all we'll say. But no, the thing is they brought that up in the post game too. You know, Cormack said that was a boost for them, that they, you know, heard it as they were making that run, how loud the crowd was. It was amazing. And really, you know, all the guys, when they were outside the locker room doing the stand-ups, although they gave them chairs this time, so it wasn't a traditional stand-up. But, you know, they said, look, the energy was amazing. And you know, there were a lot of Tar Heel fans there the other day. But that was really special, because when Carolina needed something, I mean, just from the crowd to sort of boost that run, I think you saw that helped them out a lot, because this was a team that needed this fan base behind them, sort of get them going, get them talking on the floor and everything like that. And I think you saw that was a big factor for Carolina in this rally, and it's why it's so important for Tar Heel fans to continue to show up. They were wondering, you know, will there be as big of a contingent in Los Angeles? I think they'll probably be pleasantly surprised when they get out there to see a lot of Tar Heel fans on their side.
Yeah, it's good to know that, you know, the national brand shows up even when it's local. And there's no doubt about it. Carolina does not win the game yesterday without the Carolina fans showing up and making a difference. Mm-hmm. Take a look at the box score here. Carolina shot 47% from the field. They were 28 of 60. Michigan State shot 44%. They were 26 of 59. Both teams shot 38% from three, but here was the kicker. Carolina was 10 of 26 from three. Michigan State, 6 of 16. So Carolina, you know, plus 12 in the three-point category. The Heels were 19 of 23 from the foul line. Michigan State, just 11 of 15. We talked about going into the game how important turnovers were. Just 5 turnovers for Carolina, their second fewest in a game this season. That led to 7 Michigan State points off of turnovers. But 11 Michigan State turnovers turned into 16 points for Carolina. Rebounding, Carolina got out rebounded for the first time in like 24 games. They lost it 37-32, 31-27 on the defensive glass. And they got out rebounded 6-5 on the offensive glass. But again, 5 offensive rebounds, 10 second chance points. 6 offensive rebounds for Michigan State, just 2 second chance points. Bench points, Michigan State did get Carolina in that category, 14-10. Points in the paint, both had 28. Both teams had 9 fast break points. About 6 blocks for Carolina. We'll talk about that when we talk about the bench play in a little bit. And ultimately, Carolina, 12 assists on 28 made baskets. Michigan State, 6 assists on 26 made baskets. The game was tied for 56 seconds. Ultimately, Carolina led for 24 minutes, 28 seconds in the ballgame. Now let's get into the quotes of the game. And I said quotes because there's 3 pieces of sound I want to play for you today. We've been referencing that Hubert Davis speech. He did his TV timeout or his TV hit. I think it was at the under 12 is when he whenever he had to do his required TV hit with Allie LaForce. And he made it known that he could not talk basketball with this team. He had to bring the fight before they could talk about anything else.
Well, Coach, they were willing themselves into the paint.
They're tougher. They're catching the ball right underneath the basket. Until we meet the fight, then that's when things will turn around.
Thank you. Get in the tunnel. Thank you.
The best part about it is, of course, if you were watching at home, I mean, he turns around and he's back in the huddle within 3 seconds. And he's in there, I mean, already just barking at him. You go back to when he got hired. We got told he's the nicest guy off the court. But when he gets in between the battle, the lines of competition, that man competes his tail off. You saw it during the run his first year as the head coach. Mm-hmm. Not so much last year, although I believe that was because it was a team that he just knew internally it didn't matter if he cussed at them. They weren't going to respond. Man, we've seen that fire. We've seen that emotion come out of him. And it's not like it was with Roy Williams, because it'll never be like it was with Roy Williams. I thoroughly enjoy watching his sideline antics. I love seeing him get that clap. He gets that leg gets to kicking. Those glasses get taken down and he starts and he gets in them, and he's had the pulse of this group. I've said it all year long since the first time they got together in the summer, and he had the pulse of them yesterday because, he's an encourager. He's a positive guy. He talked about it in his post game interview that even when, you know, it's rainy and cloudy, he's an optimistic guy. He's thankful for the clouds, like he's thankful for the sunshine. But yesterday was the right time for him to get in his team's rear end, get in his team's ear and challenge them. And what you love about this group and what we've loved about it all year long is they respond to it. And they don't take it personal. They don't get down on themselves and they don't all coaches getting on me. It's all, my God, I got to play better. And I don't know if he necessarily benched Harrison Ingram. He kind of sat him there for just a minute, and the message was received. You've seen that with every player this year. He's done it with RJ. He's done it with Armando. He's done it with Cormac, Ingram, Cadeau. And every time they've come back and they've responded, and, man, once Carolina, put on their boxing gloves, and they went and got into the ring of competition, it wasn't even close who the mm-hmm. better team was. And it was like, they flipped the switch and all of a sudden, they were basically running Michigan State out of the gym. And so, he gives us a good soundbite every once in a while. That was one yesterday. And it was fun seeing Carolina respond to their head coach, challenging their toughness, despite it being a game in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had no choice, because he wasn't wrong. I mean, Carolina, this was not, Michigan State was just hitting tough shots. And they were. But, I mean, it was way too easy early in the game. We saw it at times in that game against Wagner, too. But this time around, when Carolina responded, there was nothing that Michigan State could do about it. I mean, look, Malik Hall, and he's a hell of a player. I mean, man, he hit some tough shots. And there were a couple of times where in that second half, he hit big shots to keep Michigan State around. But the thing was is that there was never anything easy inside the rest of the day. Because, yeah, you could see that a switch flipped immediately after Hubert Davis let those guys know what was the issue. And Harrison Ingram said it. He said, look, guys, we are not competing inside. You heard it right there. And he pointed to Armando and Harrison as the reason why things were so easy. And Harrison said, yeah, man, that hurts. But he said, I got set down for a minute and I knew I had to respond. And boy, did he. And Armando did as well. I think the moment where things really changed for Armando, he has the block where I think they called a travel on Hogard. And that, I mean, you see him just the emotion starts pouring out of Armando. And the fire, I'll tell you what, man, there's been times this year where you've seen it from Armando. Where it's, you know, a couple of moments of, you know, Armando getting fired up. This entire tournament, these first two games, Armando has been fiery, man. And, I mean, RJ said at one point he had to tell him, dude, calm down. You're going to get a tech here. Like, you guys got to settle down a little bit. But that was, you know, that was what you needed to see from this team. And when you saw that, that's when, you know, sitting on media row, I mean, yeah, they had started to make the run. But when you saw Armando starting to get vocal and fired up, that's when you know that this team is really starting to feel themselves. And it was all because of that response to Hubert Davis. And, you know, I think you look at the way that he is on the sidelines. And then I asked RJ, you know, what were you telling the guys during that time? And he said, look, I was telling them that we've been here, you know, we've been here before. We know what we have to do in this type of situation. So I think that balance of his fire in that moment and the senior leadership of RJ Davis to say, look, guys, we're okay. We've been here before. We know how to respond to this. I think that worked perfectly for this team and really allowed them to settle into this game and take over just as quickly as Michigan State was able to get out to a quick start.
The next piece of sound I want to play is from Armando Bacot, who admitted in the post game that this was as stressed he's ever been going into a game.
Michigan State, they're a scary team. They're physical. They play fast just like us. And I was super stressed going into the game. I mean, I told Big Mate right before the game, I'm like, man, like, stressed. Like, I don't want to lose this game. But, I mean, I was poised at the same time. And for us to go out there and win that is just a huge weight lifted off our back. And we're just glad to win the Charlotte tournament. Now we're moving on to the LA tournament.
Yeah, you can tell that this is a fifth-year senior that knows whenever it's over, it's over. Mm-hmm. And it's what makes March March is because you have to play with a sense of urgency every time on the floor because you don't get to come back if you lose. It's why it's right there with the NFL where this is the toughest championship to win in sports. Because you got to win six single elimination games on neutral courts, in different time zones, in different locations. Sometimes you've got your fan base behind you, sometimes you don't. Mm-hmm. And it tells you where Armando is and what he's feeling, because there's pressure every time this program takes the floor to win. Especially in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, this team knows what's being said about them. I know, you know, Hubert Davis tells them to block out the noise and ignore all sideshow distractions, but you're also using that as motivation and fuel to get your team where you want to get to. And so it might be crazy because Armando's played in the national championship game. He's played against Duke in the Final Four. He's played in Cameron Indoor Stadium with his season on the line. He played in Cameron with an ACC regular season championship on the line 3 weeks ago. But he's not wrong to say that because if they lose, he doesn't get to come back. And all this kid has talked about outwardly since 2022 is getting back to the Final Four, getting back to the national championship game, and cutting down the nets. So I had no issues with what he said there. Now let's get to what I think is the most fun piece of sound we got to play, which is Harrison Ingram talking about Michigan State and the way that they talk trash throughout the game.
Yeah, I haven't seen a team talk like that since like our scrimmage at the beginning of the year, and it was ridiculous. I was like, "What are you like? What for? What?" And, you know, now they're going home, and to see how it got them.
Did it get under your skin at all?
Not at all. It fires me up. I love it. Please talk. I hope everybody talks to us. It gets us going.
I God, I love that quote. I mean, he literally said, you talked all that talk for what? Now you're going home. It was ridiculous. Michigan State isn't Duke. They're not Kansas. They're not Kentucky. They're not Villanova. By God, I love beating their rear ends. I love beating that smug, arrogant, underachieving coach that Tom Izzo is. And it was evident that they were chirping early, and it was very evident by the end of the game they had finally shut up. And you want to talk about a team having an edge and a team that has done that all year long? Man, Carolina has shut just about every opponent up when they get to talking. Outside of probably losing to State in the ACC tournament final, you know, every game when Carolina got against a team that wanted to chirp, man, this team, A, chirped back, and B, shut them up. And, man, dude, Harrison's right. For whatever reason, this group fuels off of other teams talking trash to them. It's kind of odd that it's not you talking trash that gets you going, but it's like once a team starts talking, this team, you know, they kind of just stand up. They have a backbone, and then they start making plays, and then Lord knows we start talking, and it's a lot of fun, and I just cannot get over that quote where he said, "You talked all that for what? Now you're going home." I love it. I hope Bama or Grand Canyon, I hope they talk to him, and he goes out there and drops 5 threes on him, because I think him and Cormack, as much as any other player on this team, they respond to it in a positive way. We all know what Cormack said at Cameron Indoor Stadium when he hit that first of many threes against Duke, something that we cannot and will not repeat on the show. But for whatever reason, man, this group, when it feels like people want to bark at them, man, they bark back, and they do so in a big way.
It's just, I mean, it's the mindset of these guys, and it goes into the, you know, the quotes that we've heard. You heard them say about Cormack after the game against Duke. I mean, I got to be honest. I think there might be a little bit crazy in some of these dudes, but it's a good crazy because, yeah, I love that mindset that if someone's going to talk that much, then you're going to respond. Like, what are you talking that much for? Because when you lose, we get to take shots right back. And for this team, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. It doesn't matter if it's the players on the floor, if it's a coach on the sidelines, if it's the opposing fans, whoever, if there is somebody for the opponent that is talking, then these guys are listening and they are ready to prepare some sort of response. And that's the best thing that we like about this team because, I mean, there's other teams. We've talked about other teams around the country and particularly in this conference that you just wonder at times, is there the fire there? And last year, I think that was a legitimate question that we asked. Like, there was a fire there at times from RJ Davis, but RJ is not quite the guy that I think – he's not the talker. There's moments where he'll do it. But he really sort of feeds off of other guys being the talker. You go back to the 22 run. Who was the guy that was the most vocal presence, was feeding off of, you know, people talking trash to him and then him responding? It was Brady Manick. And Carolina didn't have that guy last year. You know, Caleb Love was, you know, we've seen it at Arizona that at times he can be that guy. But, you know, when things go wrong, that's the difference with these guys. You know, if they're having an off night, you know, Caleb Love, if he's having an off night, Caleb Love gets real quiet. And that's what we've seen. It's still the same thing at Arizona. And I got to be honest, you can't really blame him. I mean, if you're struggling, you're kind of focused on yourself. You're not focused on what everybody else is saying to you. For these guys, I mean, Harrison Ingram and Cormack Ryan, they don't care. I mean, I've said it. Cormack Ryan could be 0 for 37 in a game, and he's still going to be out there letting you know if he makes a defensive play. Like, that's just how he's built, man. And I love it. You got to have that mindset. But I think it's balanced out because you see, you know, you hear Harrison say that. You see Cormack, the way that he responds. And then, you know, you hear that, you know, there's a guy in Armando that before the game is, you know, stressed. It's a good sort of stress. about, you know, going into this game, basically playing with the level of desperation that you need. That is a perfect combination, and it's what you want on this team. Guys that know, look, we're in a one-and-done tournament. We have to win. For Armando, I mean, you're talking about a dude that there is now a T-shirt of this, which I do have, by the way, that he said he would literally die for this school. So you know he is really wanting a national championship. And then there's guys on this team that just have the attitude that, you know, not only is you know, not getting there unacceptable, but, you know, we're not going to take anything from anybody along the way. You know, we're going to be humble in the fact that we're getting this experience, because last year we didn't have it for some of the guys on the roster, you know, the transfers. Same thing. Those guys, you know, you look at every single one of them, they didn't make the NCAA tournament a year ago. So for them, it's a gift as well. But at the same time, we're not going to go quietly. I think that is the amazing part about this team. And it's what makes this team so fun, and one that, you know, regardless of how it ends, we'll talk about this group for a long, long time about how fun it was to watch them.
Stat of the game, I went points off of turnovers. Carolina had 16. Michigan State just was 7. We talked about how important turnovers were going to be in the game. It was imperative that Carolina valued possessions and protect the basketball. They did that, just turning it over 5 times. They forced 11 turnovers. They scored 16 points off of them. It really allowed them to get back into the game and ultimately take control of the game. So there's our first initial look at Carolina's win over Michigan State, a win that puts them into the Sweet 16, the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. When we come back, more thoughts, more takeaways from the win. But first, we got to get you a quick word from one of our partners.
Hey there, Josh here for the Autograph Fandom app. Want to get rewarded for listening to our show? The team at Autograph, co-founded by Tom Brady, is redefining the fan experience by letting users earn points for the acts of fandom they take every day, like listening to this show. The Autograph Fandom app gives you access to your favorite UNC content in one place and offers rewards like tickets, exclusive merchandise, and much more. You're already listening to our show, but now you can earn points and get rewarded for it. Head over to the Apple App Store and search for Autograph Fandom Rewarded and download it today for free using the referral code HEALTUFF. Link and code are also in our podcast description.
Welcome back inside the Four Corners Podcast, guys. Hanging out with you on a Sunday morning, recapping that win over Michigan State, which puts Carolina in the Sweet 16. Got to talk about Harrison Ingram just stepping up. We've said it throughout the year. When he puts the ball in the basket, Carolina climbs a level higher, and it makes it possible for you to believe they can play with, compete with, and beat a UConn, a Purdue, a Houston, the three teams that separated themselves from everybody else basically by mid-January. There was no denying those are and were the three best teams in the country. They've definitely looked the part so far in their early runs in the NCAA tournament. He had a big game against Duke in Chapel Hill. Big reason why Carolina won the game. And really since then, you know, did not really have a great game until you got to the ACC tournament, where he made some shots, made some plays, and was starting to get back into being a consistent scorer. When he does what he did yesterday, Carolina can play with and beat anybody in the country, because you got to get you've got to get at least one score outside of Armando and RJ.
Yep.
Those guys could carry you to the second weekend, but they can't carry you to a Final Four. They can't carry you to a national championship. And we talked so much coming into the tournament about the, not the role players, but the other
supporting cast,
you know, stepping up. And I think you definitely got that in the mold of Ingram yesterday, who tied a season high with 5 made 3-pointers. It felt like every single one he made was big and important. And, you know, it felt like a good performance for him to build off going into next weekend, because going into next weekend, it's going to be imperative that Ingram scores, Ryan scores, and you're getting the subtle contributions from an Elliott Cadeau who quietly scored 6 points, but they felt important for his confidence. And so, you know, I think Ingram has been a guy that has embraced the moment his entire time at Carolina. He's openly talked about how what it means to play at UNC. He talked about what it meant to play in the tournament because he wasn't doing that at Stanford. And he came through in a big way for Carolina yesterday and gave you the type of performance that leads you to believe if this version of him shows up, Carolina's capable of playing deep into this tournament.
Oh, there is no doubt about that. And this is the thing that we've been wondering if we can see more consistently from him throughout the year, because he'll have a performance like this and then he gets quiet. And look, it's not that he gets super quiet where we're talking about a 4-point night or something like that, but he's a guy that, you know, kind of hovers around his season average, where this is kind of where you hope that he can get to. Because yeah, when he got in rhythm, I mean, that was the thing, is that, you know, when RJ is feeling it, when Armando is feeling it, it's one thing, because it seems like that's, you know, teams will adjust and they'll find ways to usually take one of those guys away, and somebody else always has to step up. And I think, you know, yesterday when you had Ingram at the point where when he got the ball, you knew it was going in, that's huge for you. That's what you need. And, you know, 5 made threes, look, that's, you know, I don't see that happening every game the rest of the tournament. But if he can become a consistent threat from beyond the arc, and really just a guy that when Carolina gets him a good look, that you can rely on to knock down some of those. I mean, we've seen it, you know, throughout the year. When he's hitting those mid-range jumpers, that's when the confidence starts to settle in. He hit some tough shots as well. Like he talked about Malik Hall really, you know, hitting some of those tough fadeaway shots. I mean, he hit some tough shots over Malik Hall as well. He, that was a great response from him to a guy that was having a great night on the other end. So, I mean, yeah, you're going to need him. Cormac, I thought, you know, you look at the shooting numbers, 3 of 9, 2 of 5 from beyond the arc, not going to blow anybody away, but gets to the foul line, 6 of 6. And I mean, yeah, when you come away with 14 points, that's the type of support that they need. 31 between those two guys. And then when you add Elliott Cadeau on top of them, 37 from the guys around them. That's huge. That's what you're looking for more consistently. And I'm going to tell you, you know, when they get out to LA, it really depends on who they play. But if they have to face Alabama, these guys better be able to play this way again on that end of the floor. Because if not, then it's going to be tough to keep up with that Alabama offense. They have to be prepared, man. They need to know this is the type of performance that they need. But I'll say this. We questioned it coming in. And I thought, you know, the other day against Wagner, you know, they got off to a little bit of a slow start. Part of it was just that they were feeding Armando inside. But I thought, you know, you saw it even early in this game, even when Carolina wasn't scoring, that they knew that around Armando and RJ, guys needed to step up. And I thought, you know, both games, you saw a really good showing from the supporting cast. And hopefully that can carry over into next weekend, because it's been one of the things that's been inconsistent throughout the year. But I think, you know, if it does, you're starting to see that the veteran presence, the experience on this team is really starting to pay off, because guys know when they have to turn it on.
I want to talk about the defense really quick, because it got Carolina back into the game. It fueled the 17-0 run, the 23-3 run that really gave Carolina control of the game. Michigan State shoots 44% from the field, 38% from three. Dude, Tyson Walker was brilliant. He was fantastic. He scored 24 points, was 9 of 16 from the field, was 2 of 6 from three. You talked about Malik Hall, 17 points, 6 of 10 from the field. You know, and made some really contested shots. And he had Jaden Atkins score 11 points, was 4 of 12 from the field. Those were the three double-digit scores. After the under 12 media timeout, it felt like every basket they got, they earned. After scoring very easily, very fluidly, Carolina clamped down on that end of the court without going to the full court press, which was impressive because I thought once Carolina got down 11, Carolina was going to press to try to get back into the game. The guy that you got to credit as much as anything for the change in energy, and we're going to talk about Seth Trimble and Jalen Withers here in a minute because they really made impacts in the game, even if you look outside the box score. The energy of Paxson Wojcik was noticeable yesterday, and it was a game changer. We all know he was playing against his dad, who is an assistant for Michigan State. But this is a guy that I think when he arrived at Carolina, I think expected to have a bigger role. Remember, he started the first couple games of the year. I thought he was going to have a larger role.
Oh, yes, you did.
Ultimately, I think from an offensive standpoint, his game did not translate from the Ivy League to the ACC. But what you love about Pax is he's still found other ways to impact the game. And that has been by being the energizer bunny off the bench and being the guy that comes in and just plays with his hair on fire. And he did that yesterday. And he was, taking away driving lanes. He was forcing turnovers. He got the assist to RJ in the three, the three in the corner. And before RJ even made the shot, was running down, pointing his finger up because he knew that the ACC Player of the Year was going to come through with it. And, I think the thing about this defense is, they held another opponent under 70. They're undefeated when they do so. Is it really just comes down to their energy. When they're competing on that end of the floor and they're connected and they're talking, they don't need to press to be a good defensive team. And you saw that yesterday where they got back into the game playing just straight up man-to-man defense because they were just competing on that end of the court, going over screens, getting in the passing lanes, doing the little things that you got to do to be a great individual defensive team and a collective defensive team. And we're going to point out what the starters did. There was blocks and stuff like that, but I thought the energy that Paxson Wojcik provided off the bench was as big a game changer as anything was in the comeback during that 17-0 run.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's been the whole year. It's part of the reason why, I said it, when we were talking at halftime, I would have liked to see him earlier. And I get it. Like, people are going to say, well, why would you put him on the floor? He's an offensive liability. I get that. But the thing is when you're struggling defensively, that's the one area where you never really question what he's going to bring you because he's a really solid defender and he brings that energy on that end of the floor. And you could see, he's a guy that, I mean, he's not really a talker. So you knew that when he really started going, that was when you could tell that something was a little bit different. And that, I think, shows you how much Michigan State was really talking. Him forcing the turnover, the run out, and the kick to RJ was fantastic. But I think that's the thing is that you saw it the other day with Jalen Withers. And, I mean, you saw it again yesterday, too. But you really have seen guys that have just started to understand what their roles are on this team. Maybe it wasn't the role that they thought they were going to have when they first arrived to campus. But now they're figuring out that they can make impacts in even the most minimal of roles. And, a guy like him, a guy like Withers, I mean, I thought both of those guys off the bench, and not to mention Seth Trimble, I mean, every one of those guys came in and made an impact defensively. They knew that was what they had to come into the game and do because Carolina needed it. And, I mean, that's a great job by those guys of knowing where their impact needs to be felt in this game. And it also helps that all three of those guys are, you know, defensive game changers. That's the other thing about it, is that there's so many different guys that you can put into the game. And look, they tried it with Withers. They put Withers in. It still didn't really change a whole lot, you know, right when he came in. And so that's why I wouldn't have minded seeing Wojcik. But I think that's what you love about this bench, is that this team is built on what they do defensively. We've said it so many times. This team's going to go as far as their defense takes them. And to have guys that you can really bring in to change the pace of the game on that end of the floor if an opponent gets off to a hot start, I mean, that goes a long, long way. And, I thought, you know, great job of responding by that bench, because, you know, the first game, I mean, outside of Jalen Withers, rather quiet. But you saw across the board there was an impact from this bench, and Seth Trimble was the guy that really led that charge the entire day.
Yeah, you look at the box score, and it's not going to jump out at you. Trimble scores 2 points, grabs one rebound in 18 minutes. But he had two blocks in transition that, his athleticism in person, like, you see it. And it really
– I mean, he blocked one of their big men on the first one. I mean, met him at the high point and just sent it back.
It really just stands out to you that, oh, okay, this guy's different. Those two plays, like, if those become layups, it's a closer game down the stretch.
I mean, I forget which player said it. I think it was RJ said that saved the game. Now, I don't know if I'd go that far, but, like, yeah, that was massive. And he had another one. So he had the two blocks that he was credited with. There was a third play where he goes up and alters the shot as well. So, I mean, he was just – I mean, that explosiveness, you see it from him. You're right, in person – I mean, he looks like a guy that's a member of the Tokido family. Like, you can tell that runs in the family, that explosion that they have.
And then you have just 4 points from Jalen Withers, but they were back-breaking buckets. One of them off an offensive rebound, and then one of them where he just sneaks behind the defense and gets in for an easy two.
Two huge timely plays. Two huge steals from him as well. So,
like, it was just timely plays that were made by the bench. And and ultimately, like, that's what you need from your bench. Like, there are some teams that they need a lot of scoring and they need a lot of production. Carolina just needs the bench to sustain what the starters do. And when they – but do they all have the ability to – impact the game in bigger ways. You saw it with Withers against Wagner. We've seen it with Trimble throughout the year, where he scored in double figures off the bench. And Jalen Washington just adds a different offensive threat for teams to have to account for. And, you know, you look at the game, you know, this game yesterday hit a nice, you know, face-up jump shot. And so if you look at the stat sheet, it's not going to blow you away. But the impact was there, and you could feel it. And Carolina does not win the game without the bench. So that leads us to our discussion topic before we get out for this edition of the podcast here on a Sunday morning. You know, a lot of talk about going into the field. Carolina's the weakest one. This is the bracket that everyone thought was. Had the cause for the most chaos. And look, you got Grand Canyon over St. Mary's. We'll see what they do with Alabama today. But that's not going to be the West. I definitely think with what State's done up in the South, I think, you know, the South is probably going to end up being that bracket that gets that title. But and you're going into the game yesterday. A lot of people expected Carolina to get beat. I mean, ESPN, when they started the score tracker on their website, labeled it heels on upset alert against Michigan State. Like, it was just a narrative that was being forced. I know Wally Zerbiak was talking about it and a bunch of other people that cover the sport. And ultimately, Carolina blows Michigan State out. So with that, have we did this weekend set the tone to believe that this team is going on the type of tournament run we want them to go on and what you expect the one seed in the region to go on.
We look, coming out of Thursday, I would have told you, not sure, because they still not sure, because they, you know, they had their moments where they didn't look great. You know, the compete level, they brought it up, wasn't there. And yeah, I mean, there was reasons to be, I'm not going to say concerned, but there were reasons to think that Michigan State had a chance in this game. And they showed it to you early that they did. But the way that Carolina responded to that, I think should have you feeling pretty good. Because, yeah, when you win it this game by 16, especially with the way that it started, that shows you that this team has the ability to just take over games and dominate. And that was, I think, the thing that some people were wondering about. Carolina closed this game very strong because, as we mentioned, Michigan State punched them back coming out of halftime. And they had fought to within two. And you thought, okay, Carolina's going to be in for a battle down the stretch of this game. And that did not happen. Carolina said, nope, we're not letting this happen. We're going to take this game back over, and we're going to put it away. And so I feel like because of that, you can feel pretty confident about where this team is at. Now, look, is there a reason, you know, if they have to play Alabama to, you know, be – you know, at least, you know, see a path where Carolina could get beat. Yeah, I mean, but the thing is like, you look at some of these other teams. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know how much they're talking about it because we're up, we're recording, don't have the television on. I mean, there'll be people talking today about Houston getting beat, even as good as they played against Longwood the other night. I mean, Texas A&M looked really, really good against Nebraska. There'll be people talking about Purdue getting beat. So, I mean, Carolina, this is something that if you're the Tar Heels, and I mean, look, they said it in the presser or in their stand-up interviews afterwards, like, we don't really pay attention to that kind of stuff. I mean, yes, but at the same time, I mean, you know that somebody in that locker room is seeing that and somebody's saying, guys, they are doubting us. They are still doubting us no matter what. We need to use that as motivation. So to me, I mean, yeah, I exit this weekend feeling pretty confident about Carolina's chances because I think even if they have to match up against Alabama, the supporting cast that we questioned a little bit coming in, would they be able to support RJ and Armando the way that they need to? They did. I think you've seen the defense has traveled, even though they've had moments where they've struggled. The defense has traveled with this team into the tournament. And when Carolina has needed to turn things up on that end of the floor, they have. So I feel like, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be confident. And, you know, on top of that, I think the reason that you should be confident is that this group has done it before. And it feels like they are pulling from that a little bit with RJ and with Armando. Having those guys in that locker room as leaders, having Hubert Davis as the head coach of this team that did it in his first year where he probably just felt like he was honestly riding the wave. Now he's a more experienced coach. You see that fire that's there consistently, and it's no different than during that tournament run. And I think that's the reason why going into LA, no matter who Carolina faces, you should feel confident that this team can make it to the Final Four.
Yeah, look, they won their first two games by an average of 22 points, and they're averaging 87.5 points per game. They made a statement. You know, they talk so bad about their win over Wagner in a game where they scored 90 shot and shot 55% from the field and 50% from three and mauled their opponent, you know, inside and on the glass, which you're supposed to, but nothing's a given anymore in the 116 matchup. We've seen two one seeds get beat. Shout out to Boilermaker Bo. Thanks for the support, buddy. Hopefully y'all don't lay an egg today. So you have that. And then what you did yesterday, you were down double digits and you won the game going away by double digits. That doesn't happen unless you're championship quality.
Yep.
And this team is championship quality. They're And I've said it all year long. I think there's a gap from UConn, Purdue, and Houston to Carolina. There's a gap. I believe that. But the gap gets smaller this time of the year when you're playing that way. And, I think this is a team that is motivated by the lack of respect. They're motivated by everything that's being said about them, about how they're going to be the first one seed to go home and all this type of stuff. And, you know, they've had a chip on their shoulder all year long. That chip continues to get bigger. And it's fueled what's now been a Sweet 16 run. And what do they always say about the second weekend of the tournament? From then on, man, it's a crapshoot. Well, I like our crap, and I think our crap's going to keep shooting its way into the tournament, because I think when we reconvene next week, we'll be talking about a team that's in the Final Four and we'll be playing for a chance to win a national championship. So with that, guys, it is going to wrap up this edition of the podcast. Before we let you go, we encourage you to visit the website, HeelToughBlog.com. Recap of the game is posted. Go back and read a little bit more in depth about Carolina's win over Michigan State, which puts them in the second weekend of the tournament. Of course, we'll be keeping you up to date on everything you need to know, getting you ready for the Sweet 16 matchup this upcoming week. Tar Heel football landed a recruit moments before the game as well. Anthony has you covered on that front. We want to get you in the habit of checking the website every single day, HeelToughBlog.com, for the best and the latest Carolina basketball Tar Heel football coverage. As for the podcast, you guys know where to find us. Every major podcasting platform, simply search the Four Corners Podcast where we will pop up. We're there. We encourage you guys to rate, review, and subscribe. That way you don't miss any editions of the show throughout the remainder of the basketball season. Well, with that, guys, it is going to wrap up this edition of the show. Do want to thank everybody for watching and listening. We'll thank Anthony for hosting with me once again. And as always, go Tar Heels.
Guys, it just doesn't get any sweeter than that.